Hi, everybody. This is Carmel McPherson, President of Highlander Worldwide. You're listening to Blood of Kings on the Fandom Podcast Network.
Welcome, Highlander fans, to a very special edition of Blood of Kings, the Highlander podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. From time to time, the Blood of Kings podcast may cover noteworthy and notable events, special interviews, or breaking Highlander news. Well, Highlander and Blood of King fans, we have a truly special interview today on this show. This episode is definitely worthy of the title Kingmakers. First of all, I'd like to introduce my co-host, Norman. Welcome, Norm.
Kevin's absolutely right. This episode of Kingmakers is why we created Kingmakers, because it's going to be hard for us to sustain like a level of awesomeness that we've been getting with Kingmakers, because like every single interview that we get just stacks on top of another, on top of another, on top of another. But it's going to be fantastic. We can't wait to get to the interview for you. But first, let's take a moment.
Yes, well, we wanted to let people know right now, the reason why you're hearing this ambience noise in the background is because we are recording live from the Highlander 25th television show gathering convention here at the Crown Plaza in LAX. And we got this awesome interview, and we're really excited. We're also going to give you a little update of what's been happening since we first got here. But first, we want to let people know what's going on. Now you can find us on Blood of Kings. You can find us at fpnet.podbean.com. That's where you can find the master feed of Blood of Kings and all of our other shows. You can also find the Fandom Podcast Network on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, and Google Play for Android users. And on Instagram, you can find Blood of Kings there as well and Fandom Podcast Network. On Facebook, we have a great group there called Blood of Kings, a Highlander fandom group, so make sure you check that out. And our sister page is the Blood of Kings Highlander CCG collectible card game page. You can email us at bloodofkingspodcast@gmail.com. On Twitter, we're at Blood of Kings Pod. On Instagram, we're also at Blood of Kings Podcast. My name is Kevin. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Spartan_Phoenix. Norman, where can we find you on Instagram and Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at Starfighter1701 and on Instagram at SoCalSwordFighter.
We also wanted to let our fans know we have some great Blood of Kings t-shirts with our partner TeePublic on the TeePublic store. If you go to TeePublic and you search Fandom Podcast Network, you'll see some great Blood of Kings shirts as well as some other awesome shirts from our other programming on the Fandom Podcast Network.
You know, Kevin, I want to reiterate what you just said, because a lot of people that we met and are meeting during this convention are asking us why we didn't bring t-shirts. And I've been telling them, you really need to visit our TeePublic storefront. That's, you know, if you search field Fandom Podcast Network, you'll find our storefront, and you can get the shirts of your choice, because I think that it's neat to see different types of styles on different types of people.
Agreed, yes. And we also want to let people know, because Adrian is here at the convention, he did his Sword Experience, and we want people to please go up on swordexperience.com. Next, he's got Baton Rouge on October 28th, and November 10th, he's got Providence, Rhode Island. December 30th, he has Chicago, and just recently announced in my neck of the woods, January 28th in Atlanta. And he's also going to be announcing some other great tours and opportunities regarding the Sword Experience and, of course, the Musketeer program, which we talked about with him on the Kingmakers edition with Adrian Paul. Now, we're obviously here at having a great time at the Highlander 25th Anniversary Convention here at the Crown Plaza, Los Angeles International Airport. And Norm, I thought we would, before we tease about who we have on this special guest that we are so excited about, I would let the listeners know what's been going on with us. Now, we both got into town on Thursday afternoon, checked in the hotel.
Yep.
And the first thing that we had going for us was that we organized a Blood of Kings meetup on Thursday night, where we got to meet a lot of fans, including the Adrian Angels. We also had F. Bron McAsh come by. Tell us about your thoughts of coming here to the Crown Plaza up until the Blood of Kings meeting.
Well, I think I actually posted on the Blood of Kings page that I pretty much overpacked everything I possibly could. Yes. Because it's better to be overprepared than underprepared, and it's a lot easier to do that when you're driving up. But I think that when I was really thinking about it, I got a little bit of kind of a nervous anticipation kind of feeling, because it's not because I'm nervous being here or meeting the fans. I'm nervous in that good way that I'm going to be with people that I know that are friendly, the celebrities that we've met, being able to see them again, being able to thank them again. So that's what I was feeling on the drive up. A little exhausted too, because I didn't really get a lot of sleep. That's kind of like a running theme. Like before everyone got here, it's like I really didn't get a lot of sleep. How about you?
Yeah, no, it was a lot of nervous energy, and I didn't sleep very well the night before. But we wanted to make sure that we had a good representation of Blood of Kings at the Blood of Kings meetup. Norm had some great signs made up for it, called an Evening at Joe's.
Yeah, you know, we talked about this. We advertise this a lot, actually, on our show. We've been doing this ever since we got the news that John and Carmel were going to actually put the show on. And we wanted to make sure that fans had a nice, soft landing platform for them just to be able to kick up their feet and just get to know each other again or get to meet each other for the first time. Because we've had a lot of activity on our Blood of Kings Facebook page where people have actually come together, like fans do, and then I think, hopefully, they'll be sharing their experiences with us on that page with photos and what have you. But I think it had a chance for everyone to kind of decompress and just be a part of this space and get mentally prepared for what was going to happen, because, you know, we're on day two of the 3 days, but Friday was a busy day.
Yeah, it was. It was the day of classes. And before we talk about the classes, I just want to mention for the Blood of Kings meetup, it was really cool to meet a lot of faces on Facebook that we haven't touched with personally. Mm-hmm. It was also nice to connect with the Highlander Rewatch guys and hang out with them and have a drink. Mm-hmm. It was just really nice, fun fan community that we were able to help support at our gathering. John Mosby came by, gave us an update and stuff. And one of the updates, of course, was the classes that everyone partook in on Friday. And we had a long day. Norm and I, we had 3 straight classes together. Well, sort of. I took a break, and then you had another class. You had 4 classes.
4 straight classes.
Yeah, the first one in the morning was at 7 o'clock. We had the bullwhip class, the supersonic flexible blade class with Anthony DeLongis and his wonderful wife, Mary. And so we did that for a couple hours, and that was a lot of fun.
Yep.
Then after that, we had the German longsword versus katana class that we had with Anthony, but also F. Bromnick Ash co-taught that as well.
And that was the first time they taught a class together, according to F. Bromnick Ash. And it's an interesting thing, because with Highlander fans, there is kind of a soft rivalry between which weapon do you think is more combatively superior in the arts of the hands of the immortals. The two-handed longsword, or in this case, German longsword that Bron was teaching, or the katana, which is the signature weapon of Duncan MacLeod and Connor MacLeod. So, bottom line, they both can do exactly what they need to do in the hands of an expert.
Yes, yeah. And then, so I took a break, but you went right into another class, and that was with the lovely Elizabeth Grayson and her fan kata class. Tell us a little bit about that.
That was a really interesting class because it was a little bit smaller. The classes that you and I took, the bullwhip class, was a very crowded class, especially when you're cracking 14-foot bullwhips across from each other and in around each other.
In a somewhat low-ceiling environment.
In a somewhat low-ceiling environment where there were exposed sprinkler heads. Because one of the students accidentally snagged one and nothing happened, thank God. And then in the two-handed German longsword versus katana class, where you're wielding weapons at, you know, at around 4 feet long in the hands of people that, you know, some know how to use and some are learning for the first time. So that gets a little bit crowded. But in the Tai Chi fan class, that was really, really fun. And a lot harder, much harder than I thought it was going to be, because you started off with proper warm-ups. That really got you perspiring. And then Derek May from Highlander Veritas, he co-taught the class with Elizabeth because from what I was told and from what I understand, he was really, really helpful in the Lakeland event.
Yes, he was.
And Elizabeth, you know, it was funny because she kept looking at him and saying, he's so good. And he is. He knows his stuff. And he helped repeat and perfect and fine-tune a lot of performances. And we got to a segment in the form that they said that they've never gotten to before in the fan class. We did like up to the second part of the form, which hasn't been done yet for her. So there was a great sense of achievement. It's a great sense of teamwork, and everyone really had a good time. But we were pretty much sweating pretty hard at the end.
But you weren't done, sir. I met up with you after that class, and we did the class with Anthony DeLongis again for the Art of Double Weapons.
Yes.
Now, this is something you're a little more familiar with, so I was brand new to this concept, but it's very fascinating to learn that, you know, that there's a special art to this. And, of course, probably famously shown in the Duende episode of Highlander. Tell us a little bit about your experience with Double Weapons. And, man, that was a lot of fun to do.
That was fun. And it's challenging because when you think about it, there's this you know, the mythology, but it's not a mythology, of, you know, the strength of your sword arm. And if you lose your sword arm, that means you can't fight with your other arm. But that's not necessarily true, but it's not necessarily untrue either. Because in a fight, if you lose your primary hand, you have to be able to fight with your backup hand. And that's what this class kind of taught you, because we were training in one hand, and then we had to place the weapon in our other hand, or our offhand, the one that you don't train, and it reverses your brain and your thinking a little bit and your coordination, and it kind of throws you off kilter. But at the end of the class, we were trying to be a little bit more ambidextrous in our combat sequencing with both hands. And that's very challenging, but it's also very rewarding, knowing that you're being taught by somebody who has extremely amounts of huge knowledges of experience, and that's Anthony DeLongis. And then we were treated to a very wonderful sword choreography with he and his wife Mary at the end. But the bottom line is, when you're walking into a class like this, you're walking out with something that you've never done before, a little bit of history, a little bit of knowledge, and something that you can take with you to the next step. For me, when I did this earlier on last year, the next step for me was historical European martial arts, where we train like this, where we train with two different weapons, whether it's a sword or a shield or a rapier and a dagger or two small swords, because in true martial arts or true martial fashion, you have to be able to survive the fight. If you can't do it with one hand, you have to do it with the other hand.
Right. That was very informative, and I really did enjoy that class. And I think this was a wonderful experience that Highlander Worldwide organized with Carmel and John Mosby, for the fans to interact with the celebrities that are part of this show and that know these skills. So that was a great time. And here we are. We are on day two, where there's a bunch of panels going on.
Ooh, don't forget the evening of day one.
Oh, that's right.
Let's roll that back for a second. Yeah,
I forgot. Okay, so yeah, let's go back to evening of day one.
Yeah.
There was the trivia.
Before that.
You go ahead. You start that. That's right.
So at the end of training, because we're a little tired. You know, it's been very jam-packed. I mean, we got to sleep late on Thursday night. We got to sleep late last night because there's so much to do. So after training, we cleaned up, showered, tried to get a little bit of a power nap in, a little bit something to eat, because at 7:30 on Friday night, we had the meet and greet.
That's right.
And the meet and greet was probably a pinnacle moment here for the convention, because all of the fans that paid to go to the meet and greet, they were sitting in round tables, anywhere between 8 to 10 people per table. We had to leave two seats open, because every two seats that were open were filled with celebrities. So that you had Adrian on one side of the table and, say, Elizabeth on the other side of the table, depending on how Carmel and her staff rotated them. At one point in time, we had Ken Gord at our table, you know, the executive producer of the show. You know, we had
Jim Burns.
Jim Burns rolled up at our table. We had David Abramowitz at our table. You know, we had
Elizabeth Grayson
at our table. Yeah. So it was just Don Peonesa at our table and his lovely wife, Anthony DeLongis and Mary DeLongis at our table. And we were able to spend quality time with all of them. And then we all kind of took over the bar. And then they kicked us out because our party was too big to hold a trivia game. And that's where a lot of us went and had drinks and kind of winded down. And then there was a particular person, a friend of ours and a fan, Andy Sloan, who pretty much... He proved why he knows his Highlander.
Yes.
That guy dominated.
Yes, I was able to contribute a couple of things.
You did. Yeah, you did.
I think we came in second place. We were in first for a while there, and then we gambled and lost in the last question.
Yeah, it was a Final Jeopardy kind of like greed thing that we went to, got on, right?
But that was a lot of fun. So that brings us to day two here, where we're currently at the Bloody Kings booth here at the Highlander Worldwide Gathering Convention, and a lot of fans are coming through here. In front of us, we have the silent auction table. So we're really excited, but I think our fans have waited long enough for our special guest. And, of course, they know who it is, and we are proud to say that we had Mr. Mythos himself, Peter Wingfield, come and with his limited time, give us an interview. Norm, I wanted to ask you real quick. This is one of those dream interviews that we've been wanting to do for a while. I was wondering if I could get your take on this, because I know how important this meant to you.
Well, first of all, I really want to give super huge thanks to Renee and Sean Dempsey, because they helped set up this interview, and they were fantastic about getting him to, you know, to offer up his time, because a lot of people want to see him here. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't have the time usually to come to these conventions, and he's very busy with his new career now. So that was something special for us, and something that was, you're right, we have been waiting for that to happen, because Mythos, he's one of those cornerstone characters, and Peter's one of those cornerstone actors that makes Highlander Highlander.
And what's interesting, too, is that at the meet and greet dinner last night, he made a wonderful appearance. He was late because he drove up from San Diego, where he was actually, I guess, in the hospital operating room working. And he came up after work, and he arrived late and made a great Mythos appearance towards the end of the night there. And everyone cheered, and it was great to meet him. But I say that we go ahead and roll this interview. On behalf of my co-host Norman and here at Blood of Kings, we'd like to present the special interview with Peter Wingfield, otherwise known as Mythos. Welcome, everyone, to a special interview here at Blood of Kings Live at the 25th anniversary of the Highlander TV series, The Gathering. We have a very special guest. First, I'd like to introduce my co-host Norman. Norman, welcome.
It's very, very, very special to be here. Let me tell you, I can't even stress how special it is right now.
With us is the oldest immortal that we know of, Mr. Mythos himself, Peter Wingfield. Welcome. How are you?
I am surprisingly well this morning. It was a little bit of a rough night last night with Mr. Jim Burns and I, and you guys as well. Started out in the bar and we did a little catching up, a little celebrating, and we were still celebrating when the sun came up this morning.
Well, it was great. You made a probably a Mythos type of appearance when you showed up at the meet and greet a little late, but we were all so happy to see you. And you probably drove up from San Diego, right?
Yep. Yeah. I was working yesterday, so I was in the OR putting small children to sleep while their teeth were being cleaned. And then headed up the road from there. It's so great to walk into the room and have so many friends in the room. And what have we got? A couple of hundred here or something. And people that I've been seeing over the years in conventions all around the world. And great to see so many friends.
So because you were with Jim, I just want to segue back to you and Jim last night. Yeah. You spent so much time together at the bar with us. What was the last time that you saw Jim? And because you were catching up so much.
Yeah, so I have family in Vancouver, so I go to Vancouver fairly regularly. The last time, what month are we in at the moment?
We're in October.
So it was probably, I was up in Vancouver in, I think it was April, that would have been the last time I saw him. I go there fairly regularly, so I see Jim once or twice a year on a good year.
You know, when we interviewed Adrian not too long ago, about two podcasts ago, maybe about 3 weeks ago, before this happened, he was in his car. And one question that we asked him was, what are you feeling right now at this time, knowing that this huge reunion is like literally right upon you? And I want to ask you the same question, because he said, I'm not really sure until I get there. Is that how you felt walking into the hotel? Did you have that kind of nervous anticipation? What were you feeling at the time?
I was feeling pretty tired, to be honest. I tweeted earlier on in the day. I had a minute in the OR, and I tweeted. This has been coming for so long. You know, it was months and months away, and then and suddenly it's the morning and it's happening, and just that excitement of I can get in the car and I'm going to drive up there, and it's going to be getting the gang back together. I mean, all of us together in one place. Decades.
Well, since the last Highlander Worldwide, which was like 7 years ago, 8 years ago, I think it was.
Goodness, I don't know. Lizzie was there. That one, wasn't she? Stan
was there. Last, no, this is
Stan's first appearance in, quite a while.
Yeah, so all of us getting back together, I mean, that's unprecedented. The last time I can remember that happened was Paris back in 98. So pushing 20 years ago, probably, that we were all in one place together. I mean, I'm sure there'll be fans out there now who are saying, you know nothing, you fool. Yeah, right. You were all at...
Don't you remember so-and-so?
Yeah. But, yeah, so that... the thrill of that, the privilege of a show that has survived all this time, that was so big in our lives, that completely changed my life. And then you go your separate ways. You don't see each other. You lose touch. Like I say, Jim and I keep in touch because I have family up in Vancouver, and I go there very regularly. Don Panessa, seen in a good few years. When I lived in L.A., I used to see him a lot, but... Adrian, I see at conventions, and we don't see each other for years on end. Stan, Lizzie, man, the time flies by, and then you meet up, and walking into the room was weird, because there 8-10 tables, whatever it was, with I didn't kind of click until I'd been to a couple of different tables. But at each table there was one kind of celebrity guest, a writer or one of the actors or producers, Ken Gord here, Abramowitz, And at each table, I'd sort of go and start chatting, and then suddenly realize there was someone there that I haven't seen in so long, that I was really close to, really strong bonds with, that I haven't seen. And they, some of them look exactly the same. Some of them look very different. So the character of Mythos and all the immortals, they're supposed to not change at all. And there was a period where we could all get away with that. Mm-hmm. Those days are gone now.
Well, we were looking at all the episodes that you were in Highlander. We did about 21 episodes. And one of my favorites is Methuselah's Gift.
Right.
And especially the kind of story arc that you had there. And we've talked about that on our podcast, especially with Mythos' character, reasoning why he wanted Stone and relationship with Alexa. When you look back on the episode that you did, maybe even that story arc, was there a particular one that really kind of you think about often, and that you really are proud of, or one that you really, really like?
Yeah, I mean, that episode was a tremendously powerful storyline for me, and sort of a key to Mythos as a character. But there's this very kind of flippant, light-hearted, superficial, takes nothing too seriously side. But that underpinning that, there was this raw, passionate guy who just craved that connection, understood how rare that kind of bond is, and how fleeting. And I mean, there's scenes in that I'm really proud of, that were wonderful gifts. The scenes playing with Lizzie in that.
The duel in the train station.
Yeah.
When you dropped your sword because you realized that I'm going to live forever, immortals willing, but Alexa was fighting for her life, and I loved it when you blurted out, with venom. It's like, she's breathing through a tube. You don't understand that. I was there, and I cried.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it kind of makes me feel tingly now. Just, that stuff is just beautiful writing. And it's a gift to get to play those kind of scenes. And then you have to be courageous. You have to allow that vulnerability and to do things that are kind of scary, that you risk people sniggering and laughing behind their hands. Until you do it and make it work, you don't know how it's going to go down.
There was one thing I wanted to ask you was, we were doing a rewatch recently, Valkyrie, and I was wondering, when you started kind of finding yourself in the role of Mythos, there was a particular scene in there that totally hit me over the head of why he's lived for so long. It's in the beginning where you and Joe and Duncan, your characters, are watching the boxing match. Mm-hmm. And
With Jim Burns' parents in the row behind us.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
And the immortal enters the arena, and you're like, I'm out.
Yeah.
Because your character knows how to just stay underneath the radar. Was it scenes like that, or was there certain things that you kind of said, you know, I think Mythos would do this instead, or did you kind of come up with anything? Or was that just the brilliance of the writer?
So in those early episodes, very much. It's in the writing. It's that made sense to me. I mean, from the couple of scenes that I got sent for the audition, one of the things that I recognized about the character was any immortal, however big and strong and powerful they are, and how fantastic their martial arts skills are, if you want to live for a really long time, the best way to do that is to never fight at all. If you can avoid fighting, you're going to be okay. So that made kind of intellectual sense to me. And that was in the writing from the start. I think the more that time goes on, the more episodes that get written, there becomes a symbiosis and a conversation that happens between me playing the character and the writers watching what I'm doing, where things that I will do will trigger ideas that they will then put onto a script, which will trigger things in me, and it becomes this really interesting, very cool conversation that's going on across continents. I mean, when we would be filming in Paris, they would be writing in Los Angeles. They'd be watching the dailies, the rushes of all the scenes, and then The Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse episode came out of that kind of subliminal conversation where someone had the idea, you know, what if he has this really dark past?
Yeah.
And it's one of those, you know, the idea, can, the script is there, and you read it and you go, of course. You know, that's where the writing really achieves its greatness. When you something that you did not see coming, you would not have predicted, but as soon as you see it, you go, of course.
I assume as an actor, you just wanted to sink your teeth into a role like that. It must have been like a dream job.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There was nothing but good things about playing the Mythos. He was funny and cool and interesting, and we shot half the year in Vancouver and half in Paris. Great people around me, fun to hang out with. I mean, there was no bad things about that.
We have a few more minutes here.
Well, one of the things I wanted our listeners to know, especially having had a chance to catch up with you, is that you were medical training up until you wanted to switch your careers to become an actor. And then you got the script for me. They flew you out. I think you only had like a day to prepare, perhaps. And then you did this brilliant career as an actor. But now you are a doctor. So when did that switch? I mean, it's kind of an interesting thing. You kind of put a career on hold, a career track on hold, and you took a completely different track. Thank you very much for doing that, because we love you for doing that.
You're welcome.
But now you're doing something that you stopped and you're continuing so many years later. So how does that feel? Do you feel more fulfilled now in that part of your career?
Without question. I mean, I went to medical school at 18. In England, you don't do a bachelor's degree and then go to med school. You go straight out of high school. So realistically, you're making the choices, the subject choices that you need to make yourself a good candidate for medical school when you're probably 15 years old. Mm-hmm. I got to medical school and just wasn't ready for it to be everything that I did. I think the only way to be a good doctor is for it to be what you do. It is your life. And so I left medical school before finishing, but it's always kind of been there. And coming back around the loop, I'm now there by choice in a very different way than, you know, when you're a kid. There's family pressure, there's school pressure, there is a society pressure of, This is kind of a good path for you. It's not your choice as much as when you, as a grown-up, as a 40-something-year-old, you say, no, I'm going back this is what I'm going to do. And I get that it's going to be tough, but I'm okay with it because I'm ready for it to be everything to me. And that has been the great fulfillment for me second time around, is that I am ready for it and I'm loving it. It is challenging intellectually and emotionally and spiritually, and I'm very much engaged in that moment by moment exploration. Being an actor, what I've done for the last 20 odd years is really helpful. Medicine is about empathy. It's about connection. Acting is about empathy and connection. That's understanding how the world might be if you were someone else, if your circumstances were different. So that has stood me in really good stead for what I do now.
Peter, on behalf of my co-host here, Blake Kings, Norman, and myself, thank you so much for doing this interview with us, and we're really looking forward to seeing you throughout the rest of the convention.
Absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much, sir.
Okay. Thank you, Peter. You guys. Okay, thanks for stopping by.
Sure.
Thank you.
All right, here we are back. Wonderful to have Peter Wingfield. He was so gracious, and I love talking with him. Norm, how cool was that?
It's kind of surreal, and I don't use that word a lot because I think that the true meaning of that is it's a shift. It's a little bit beyond reality because he was sitting a foot away from us, less than a foot because he was like right next to the mic, inches away from us.
Yeah.
And this is Peter Wingfield, right? I mean, we've idolized him, you know, quote-unquote idolized him on the screen as Mythos. But there was a point in time during the course of the interview where you saw past the character and you saw into the person, into who Peter is. And the passion that he had for his role, his contribution to the show, not only that, but now his shift in his profession and what he's doing with his responsibilities as a doctor. And I love what he said about how he compared and contrasted being an actor to being a doctor, and the link between the two in order to do either of those professions well is empathy, being able to connect with the person on the other side of the equation. On one side, it would be the audience. On the other side, it would be his patients. And being able to take care of them and being able to empathize with their plight. So when he started getting into those kind of answers, this was now Peter, the physician, talking as much as he is Peter, the celebrity, talking.
Right.
And I thought that was really profound. It was something that struck me quite deeply, actually.
Yeah, I liked how he, when I was asking him about, like, if he got to give his own little input on the character after he started feeling comfortable with it, and I loved how his response to that. I also loved how he gave credit to the writing of the show as well. And I could just tell when I asked him about this character and this meaty, wonderful character that he got to bite into and just fully envelop. You could tell he was very proud of it, and it's something that he looks back fondly on. Especially when he was talking about meeting up with a lot of his friends here from the show that he hasn't seen in a long time and connecting with the fans.
Well, I think that was one thing that was really profound about the meet and greet is, every single time somebody walked in, every single one of the celebrities that walked in, they scanned the crowd, and all of a sudden someone waved high, and you saw this joy in their face, recognizing, like, oh my God, I didn't see you, I haven't seen you in 20 years, or I haven't seen you in 25 years, or I haven't seen you. And so a lot of that was happening, and then when Peter came in, because he came in late, he was the one who was scanning the crowd, and the crowd was scanning him. And then there were so many people, like the embrace that he and David Abramowitz had together was just—it was magical to see.
That was awesome,
right? And David Abramowitz elated. He spoke about this earlier on in at the opening statement. He said that this is very profound. This is very special of a space because this is something that is that's never been done in 25 years.
The thing that I liked too was the embrace that he gave Joe or Jim Burns.
Yeah,
and we had a little brief Mythos and Joe moment at the dinner last night when he first arrived. That was really cool. And then, obviously talking with Elizabeth Grayson, it was really, really cool.
That's funny. I like that too. They had a brief moment at the meet and greet, but they had a much longer reunion and catch up during the course of the evening. So.
Yeah. Well, it has been a great honor interviewing Peter Wingfield. But we also have a wide variety of other shows briefly that we'd like to mention here on the Fandom Podcast Network. Other than Bloody Kings, we have Culture Clash, our weekly fandom show that I co-host with my friend and co-founder, co-host Kyle. We also have Couch Potato Theater, where it's those films that you love to watch on the couch and you don't get up for. We celebrate many of those. We recently did a Blade Runner retrospective. We also have Time Warp, where we look back on a particular fandom and celebrate it. Recently, we're doing 1987, the movies, for the 30th anniversary of all those. And coming out soon, we also have a Buffy Halloween special, looking back on Buffy. And we have a co-host and friend of the show, Aaron Gill, along with Kyle and myself doing that. We also have Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast with your hosts Tom, Brandon, and Chris. We also have, for the football season, we have End Zone, our NFL weekly show that both Kyle and I co-host. And we have a brand new show that Norm and I co-host called Discoville, where we celebrate Star Trek Discovery and Star Trek-inspired show, The Orville. I know that's a show that you're both also very proud of, Norm.
We love it because you and I, when we started watching those two shows, we said there's got to be a space out there for people to be able to come in and enjoy both shows because there's far too much, this is better than that, or I'm going to watch this, I'm not going to watch that. You know, come listen to our show. If you love both shows, come listen to our show. And we're really excited about a certain celebrity who's going to be here at the convention because not only is he famous for Highlander as his role as Grayson from the episode Band of Brothers, but he's also a star from the Orville who played High Priest Sazeron on the very most recent episode, Episode 6, Krill. So, and of course, Star Trek alumni as Joe Brill. And obviously,
Mr. James Horan.
Yeah. Yes.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone. I hope you've enjoyed this special episode of Kingmakers. I guess we're kind of recording live here at the gathering here. On behalf of a very special guest, Mr. Peter Wingfield, a.k.a. Mythos, and my co-host Norman, thanks, everyone, for listening to this very special episode of Kingmakers. And join us again next time here on the Fandom Podcast Network for another episode of Blood of Kings. Goodbye, everyone.
Because it clearly is not me actually doing anything at all.
So. All right. I'm ready when you are.
We are ready.
Okay,
I've
got this recording here. I've got this going here. All right.
Let's roll.
Let's do this.
All right.
Now we're gonna look like we're talking for the photos.
Look intensely at the...
Yes.
Yes, that's very intense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm, all right. Maybe gesturing.
Gesturing,
you know,
is good.
Yeah.
You know, we could, like,
yeah. 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 Yeah.